actually the most powerful earthquake in North American history, at least in recorded history that we can tell. So the fortunate thing about 1811, 1812 is that the population density was nothing near what it is right now. So, and if you just look at the infrastructure and everything that's in place now that didn't exist at that time, those changes would really drastically alter the net impact of seeing a similar sized and magnitude earthquake. So part of it has to do with the geology of where we are right now, the fact that the ground is very different than like the western U.S. fault line, like the San Andreas fault and the mountains there. The transference of the energy through the ground, it doesn't go very far, whereas here in 1811, 1812, the earthquake was strong enough that it actually rang church bells in Boston and reversed the flow of the Mississippi River. So if we thought that, you know, the flooding that we saw in 2011 and 2013 was bad, well, imagine if you reverse the flow of the Ohio and Mississippi rivers and you flatten all of the levees that are there to protect us from those rivers. That's on top of the ground shake and the impact on infrastructure. It really would be a catastrophic level disaster.
Not to mention, California seems prepared for these things to happen, that a lot of effort and energy is put into the architecture to make sure that they could hold up if there is ground shake. Does Illinois prepare in that regard, or are buildings and structures up to that?
Well, that's an excellent point, and one of our primary areas of concern is that because the frequency of what they experience on the West Coast really kind of dictated the building codes and everything else that they utilize for, you know, both their transportation networks, their electrical grid, their all of their buildings. But that is not really replicated very well, if at all, in the central United States. So we have a lot of what's classified as unreinforced masonry buildings, and those are the ones that are most susceptible to these types of ground shake and earthquakes. So the code is really not where it needs to be, and it's something that we continue to try and push for, but it adds some significant complications because of the costs associated with building buildings to that standard. So the code is really not where it needs to be, and the end result of that is we would see a lot more damage. So we estimate among the 8 states that would be impacted by this earthquake, over 718,000 buildings would be badly damaged or completely destroyed if an earthquake like this were to happen. So obviously that's extremely significant.
Could an earthquake occur? Where are the fault lines, so to speak?
Yeah, so there's actually two. So the New Madrid seismic zone really extends, in essence, from St. Louis to Memphis. That's kind of the stretch of the entire zone. Now, the main fault lines really kind of run along underneath the Mississippi River, and the last major one was actually experienced in New Madrid, which is a small town in Missouri. So that's the primary area for that fault zone, but we also have the Wabash Valley seismic zone, which is actually on the southeast border of Illinois, on the border of Illinois and Indiana, and that's another primary area of concern. So we've seen earthquakes happen along there with relative frequency, again, not as powerful as the one that we're exercising, but with enough frequency that we should definitely be concerned. The hard part is understanding, are those two related? And the geology of it is not particularly well understood, certainly compared to the San Andreas out west or something like that. That's the result of plate tectonics. That's not really the case here because we're in the middle of a tectonic plate. So the forces that generate these earthquakes are not fully understood, and that makes it difficult to understand the interconnectivity of having multiple fault lines within one particular region.
What are you doing to possibly be able to prepare for this, given all that we've talked about, given the lack of geological information, the lack of possibility of warning, buildings that aren't able to handle this sort of literal shock? What can you do to prepare?
Yeah, it's a great question, because that's exactly the problem that we're trying to work our way through. And what it comes down to is making sure that we can be proficient at something that we don't do with great frequency, not only because we don't have a lot of earthquakes, fortunately, but also because in this context, in this scenario, we would need an incredible amount of assistance from outside the state of Illinois. And despite the fact that Illinois has had 11 declared disasters in the last 5 years, we have not had to request out-of-state assets to deal with any of them. We've had enough capacity within the state to be able to deal with it. Well, in this context, there would have to be dozens of states from across the country providing assistance to us in order to do it. And that's a big part of what we're really working through in the exercise, is doing that needs assessment, understanding where the gaps are and how much stuff we would actually need to be able to do it, and then going out and finding it to make sure that it's not just a definition of the problem, but also a framework for the solution.
What specifically is going on then?
There's a lot of play that's happening virtually. You know, there's a lot of crosstalk that's happening over you know, some of the systems that we have built to be able to accommodate and execute some of these things. There will be emails and that kind of stuff. But then there's also the physical play. So we have units from multiple companies. The private sector is sending teams down here. We have, you know, a joint task force headquarters is coming down from the Wisconsin National Guard. We will have the physical deployment of assets to test out not just the theoretical of, well, this would move and this would come here and this is where we would get it from, but to actually do it and make sure that we can implement. Now, certainly not on a scale that we would need in the actual response, but enough to make sure that we see and test all of those pressure points along the way for how we leverage those assets.
What am I missing, Director Monken?
I think the most important thing is the awareness of the earthquake threat. So the fact that we're having this conversation and we let people know, it's important that people know that that's actually out there. It's just easy to make assumptions about what people need to be concerned about. And this is one of those types of incidents that's hugely important in terms of life safety and the ultimate impact, that if you don't know about the threat and what to do, then it can make a big difference in terms of the overall impact. So take Hurricane Katrina as an example. Had people been better prepared themselves in terms of having the right supplies, you've got a disaster kit at home, a weather alert radio, you have food and clothing and medications and things that you would need, if you're cut off from those first responders because of the nature of the threat or the hazard in this case, then you can sustain yourself for a couple of days. And if you can do that, it makes all the difference in terms of the number of lives lost and the number of people that are injured. So just the awareness of it is very, very important to us, and make sure that people know what to do. And that's a lot of that stuff's available on our website, ready.illinois.gov.
Is there anything that people need to do differently in the event of an earthquake versus a tornado or a flood or one of the other disasters that Illinois could face?
Sure. I mean, some of the simple things is that the number one killer of people in an earthquake is falling debris. So the point there being that people instinctually in a lot of cases would say, well, if the building's shaking, they're more concerned about the building falling down and people try and get out of the building. And that's actually the most dangerous thing that you can do. It's pretty straightforward. The three steps are drop, cover, and hold on. Get down to the ground, get under something sturdy, and hold on to it because it's going to move. You know, if you can do that, and, you know, we talk about the preparedness kits of having some food and water and clothing and prescription medications and things like that, you're really altering the conversation. Just like any other threat, you know, if you look at tornadoes, taking the right steps can save a lot of lives. And I think the awareness of tornadoes in Illinois is such that people really heed that advice, they take it to heart, and the effect has been that fewer people have died in tornadoes in circumstances where the fatality counts could have been much higher. And we want to apply those same principles to earthquake.